Amen. Are you afraid of the truth? Afraid truth. So you might be thinking, what truth? Or do you know my truth? Or are you afraid of the truth? Maybe it's the truth of your own mortality. Maybe it's the truth of an admitted failure or a broken relationship. Maybe the truth is something that has eluded you your whole life. You're in search of, in other words, what might be the truth. Maybe you're hiding something that you know is true about you, but you really don't want to admit it. I had a friend tell me one time that he started therapy. And those that know me know that I'm a huge proponent of therapy. And I was talking to this buddy of mine from college about going to a therapist. And he was like, I really wanted to do it. And I sat down, and then he started to tell me the truth. And I ran out. Right? Because none of us, whatever this, you know, it's a little bit abstract, right? It's a little bit individual. It has to be abstract, but they're out there, these things of failures and broken relationships and longings and perceived hopes and disappointments. All these things are sort of living in your life, right? It has agency. There's some sort of idea of where is my truth, or where is the truth. Now, it's also, you know, as we know, most things in life, and we learned this from Ben Franklin's endearing quote, right? He said, our new constitution is now established. It has an appearance that promises permanency. But in this world, nothing can be said to be certain or true except death and taxes, right? Nothing can be true except for death and taxes. And so, there is no doubt that one level, when we speak about truth, we're talking about mortality. Talking about our mortality and the mortality of those around us, and especially those that we love. But that's not just mortality of individuals. That could be what we call the more lowercase d deaths. The lowercase, we'll call them lowercase t truths. Right? These are deaths of careers, deaths of relationships, deaths of hopes and dreams and expectations. These are places where we have loss, in other words, where things have disappointed us, let us down. Things that we really don't want to admit to most of the time, which is why we tend to run away from the truth when it comes at us like a heat-seeking missile. One of my mentors, and theologian Paul Zoll, talks about this as abreaction. That's an effect where you have this emotional effect when something comes at you, like what happened to my friend in that therapist's office where he sat down and sort of just nailed him, which is a bad move for a therapist to do. Brian would probably back me up on this, do it in the first 5 minutes. Even if you have sized him up, like give him a little bit of time, Cheryl will probably go along with this too. Like you really want to punch him in the face, which is clearly the way my friend interpreted. Though he's in therapy now, 20 years later. but the idea, like when truth comes at us, when we learn something about ourselves or someone else, it creates an emotional lightning, doesn't it? Like you're abreacting is where Paul Zoll talks about. Like it bubbles up inside of. So we have layers and layers of ways to protect us. The biggest one is the masks that we all wear. I was playing tennis with a good friend 2 weeks ago, and we were talking about our outward selves versus our tennis selves. You know, the tennis self being the pure self, like you're sort of, you're playing, you're sweating, you're sort of being normal or your true self. But then when you're in a business meeting or a board meeting or a vestry meeting or in the pulpit or somewhere else, you're this different person. You put all your masks on. And my friend said, which is something I think we all feel, which is that if I didn't have my mask, there'd be some people out there that would want to ruin me, right? Which is probably true. I mean, I was like, unfortunately for me, I probably already ruined myself. So like, unfortunately, my masks are all burned up. But nevertheless, like, you get the point. We wear these things to protect ourselves from the truth, protect ourselves from others finding out the truth. So just think for a second about your own ways to protect yourself from the truth, right? Maybe it's you use a personality. Maybe you cultivate sort of an image that you bring up, like you're going to be the efficient one, or you say, well, I'm this in my household, or maybe it's how you dress or the cars you drive. Maybe it's sweetness and light, as a business school professor told me, where you just sort of keep things really superficial. You always go back to the weather, right? That taxi cab conversation. How are you feeling today? The weather looks great. What else is going on? That must have been really hard what you went through last week. It's going to be 90 tomorrow. But what about, so exciting about your kid. Did you know that it's going to rain in 3 weeks? You get my point, right? You just keep pushing away from that truth that's coming at you. So whatever your mask is, for the disciples this morning, their mask was just to go into scorekeeping. We do that all the time. Jesus was getting into the capital T truth about his life. And what did they decide to do? They were like, who's going to be first? Who gets to sit beside Jesus? Who is going to get the first beer from the refrigerator? I mean, that's what they're arguing about, right? Jesus is sitting there laying down the capital T truth about God and our relationship to God. And the disciples are having a squabble about who's one or two or who's going to get to sit where. It's like a Logan family Thanksgiving dinner. I mean, we use name cards, so really they control all rest in my aunts. But nevertheless, right, like, they're you know, here's Jesus. You know, he was saying the same thing last week. Did you notice that? Mark, he was going through it. For those that weren't here, that's fine. If you missed church, we're not keeping score. For those that weren't here last week, Jesus said, the Son of Man will be betrayed and turned over to the authorities and will be persecuted and killed. It's pretty strong language. He came at him with both barrels, and he's saying it again. It tells us today that they're on their way. They're passing through Galilee, and he just keeps hitting them. He doesn't say, how's the weather? He keeps saying, they're going to kill me. Jesus, what do you think about this highway? They're going to kill me. What do you think we should do for dinner tonight? You know they're going to kill me. Where do you want to sleep tonight? You know they're going to kill me. I mean, literally, think about that. He just keeps hammering it over and over and over again. Think how scary that would be. Somebody just hammering you with death, with this capital T, they are going to persecute me. What on earth would you think if you heard that repeatedly from your leader? What if you went to your next board retreat or your next corporate outing and the CEO kept saying, this business is going to fail? It's going to fail. Well, sir, what do you think we should do about our sales reports? We're going to fail. Think about that for a second. Think about that. What if you just envision your family dinner and this one person at the dinner table kept saying, this family's going to fail. This family's going to fail. This family's going to be persecuted. What on earth would you do? Now, I think this is really hard for both the disciples and for us. In some ways, it is one of those places where we've run even farther away from, right? Because we have our advanced technology and our enhanced awareness that we can hide from these capital T truths. We can go to Instagram and put our best selves. We can look at dogs. Did you know that pets have their own business now as influencers on Instagram? Pets! Anyway, it's not related to the sermon. I just thought that was just wild reading that Wall Street Journal. But it just shows you the things that we'll do to escape. Yeah, I love my dogs, but the things that we will do to escape these capital T truths. Who likes the comedian Norm MacDonald? Y'all, I'm impressed. Yeah, there we go. So I was thinking about retelling the moth joke, if you follow that. I just commend it to you. The moth, M-O-T-H joke. You can catch it anywhere. Norm MacDonald. It is hilarious. But he also had some deep Christian insights. Listen to this quote that he gave 2 years ago. The Enlightenment turned us away from truth and towards a darkling, weakening horizon, sad and gray to see. The afterglow of Christianity is near gone now, and a Stygian silence lurks in wait. Stygian would be just a dark, cavernous tomb. Think about that. You know, in our sort of enlightenment phase, we think that we're all pursuing the truth, that we know the truth, or that we can discover it. But the reality is, the more that we think that, the farther we're running away from the one who came to deliver the truth to us. Because we're putting all that back onto us and what we're going to find, as opposed to hearing God tell us the capital T truth. But they did not understand what he was saying and were afraid to ask him. The text tells us today that the disciples were afraid of the truth. Because what he was telling them was the capital T truth, that God was going to be turned over and persecuted and killed. That their leader was going to fail, that their movement was going to be destroyed. And he was just hammering it over and over and over again. I'd be afraid to ask them too. At this point, I'd start arguing about, well, at least I'll be number one. I mean, think about how silly that is all of a sudden, right? Because the whole enterprise Jesus is telling them is doomed to fail. But yet they're worried about who's going to get to drive the boat. It'd be like being on the Titanic after the iceberg had been hit. And they're sitting there arguing, it's my turn to press the rudder down. Well, the boat's going to sink in, what, 3 hours? Great. Enjoy playing with the rudders. But that's what they're arguing about. They don't want, and who would want, to acknowledge this capital T truth, that Jesus, that God, that the Messiah, that the Christ would die? What are you talking about, Jesus? Talk about an uncomfortable therapy session. Like, what are you talking about that you're going to get turned over and killed, persecuted? And that in that you'll find life. What? This is the whole crux of the gospel, is that this capital T truth about our mortality, about the things that will pass away, as our collect says, points us towards the one thing that will never pass away. The one thing that we can abide, that we can rest in, that we can fasten ourselves to. And that's Jesus. Jesus, who also carries with him fear and trembling into the garden when he is agonized about the isolation and his upcoming death. And that these fears that he carries onto the cross, that provides his wounds, that provides the good news, that through this capital T truth of a man crucified 2,000 years ago, we are healed. That capital T truth, that through his wounds, by his wounds, we are healed. Now, this isn't the most warm and fuzzy idea of Christianity, I get you. But it's the capital T truth that through Jesus' death, we are healed. That through his death, we can be vulnerable. We can cry. We can admit failures. We can admit those own little capital T truths in our lives that set us free. We can admit that we have left things undone and that we have done so many things that we wish we had never done. We can admit in that internal place, that real place that we have all bouldered off and locked off from that one thing that we never want to tell anybody, or that two things or three things or four things, however many they are, there's no keeping score, but we all have those places. And what the capital T truth says is that we can unlock those, that the cross has shattered the gates that hold those internally in us, and that God is there. He's not outside of those places. He's inside of them. He is there in that scary place where we're totally naked, like Adam and Eve in the garden. And God's there, where we're completely open with weakness and getting punched in the face maybe once or twice, whatever's happening. But God is there in that scary place. With fear and trembling, we come to the Lord. The Lord already comes to us. The gospel's scary. This is a place where the gospel is very scary. Because the gospel is not concerned with your best self. The gospel is 100% concerned with your worst self. And telling that worst self, that's okay. I love you. You're going to the paradise. I went to the cross for you. This is what Jesus is telling people. This is what Jürgen Moltmann captured so well when he writes about the power of the cross. To know God in the cross of Christ is a crucifying form of knowledge because it shatters everything to which a man can hold and which he can build. Everything, in other words, that we hold dear or hold as protection, as masks of our own weaknesses and shortcomings, everything that we do to hide our own truths from others, all the stories we tell each other, all the stories we tell Facebook or Instagram or anything else are shattered on the cross. They're gone. All things are emptied out. And so there you stand and sit naked, crying as a little child. Helpless, totally dependent. And thank God what looks at us is God. And that's the truth of the cross. And this is an affront, right? That's why that Enlightenment quote is so powerful. This is an affront to us, smart, Western, powerful people. That this radical and unconditional acceptance is found from God, not because of anything we're doing and not because of any of our accomplishments. It's why we say that the ground is level at the foot of the cross. And it's the capital T truth. So what's this look like? The closing illustration. Well, I've already professed my love of Ted Lasso, the Apple TV show. If you haven't watched it, you need to, and this is the second season, so more spoilers, I'm sorry. Maybe you don't need to watch it, just listen to a couple more sermons. Anyway, Ted Lasso is the American football coach who's in Europe coaching European football. And the second season just completed, and one of the arcs in this season is Dr. Sharon Fieldstone. She was not in the first season, she's in the second. She's the team therapist or psychologist. And she does all this wonderful work with the players and is some incredible stories there. But it zeroes in on Ted. Ted, played by Jason Sudeikis, is this sort of bubbly, insightful coach, right? That's more concerned with the individual and having the individual feel accepted than he is the actual scorecard. Wall Street Journal article from mid-August said that at least 7 NBA coaches were using Ted Lasso scenes to motivate their players. So it's resonating. Lasso is definitely a resonator. So anyway, but he's got this whole sort of persona. He does not go deep. Pearson, but not deep in terms where his own weaknesses are. Well, like a lot of us that are really good at our masks, there comes a time when he just can't cope anymore. He's in the middle of a game, and he begins to ball up his hands, and he has to run out of the field. He can't be there. And he goes and curls up in a room like a little child and hyperventilates. He can no longer hide from the truth. Now, we don't know exactly what that truth is at that point. But he does know that he needs to go and talk to Dr. Sharon Fieldstone. So he goes in to talk to Dr. Fieldstone. They go back and forth for a couple different episodes. And finally, she says, Ted, you've got to get to the truth because the truth will set you free. But first, it'll piss you off. I love that because that's true. And it's what we've seen in the whole gospel story today, right? They don't want to deal with Jesus saying, I'm going to fail. So they're going to go and argue about who's going to be number one. And then later they'll get indignant. They were even that way. Peter was that way last week. Jesus, don't talk like that. That's not true. But yet it is true. A friend of mine wrote a reflection on this Ted Lasso, and I'll close here. The truth harms before it heals. And this order of operations is significant. The two-season story of Ted Lasso is beginning to resemble the Bible's own two testament narrative. Like Ted Lasso, God's second season wasn't a betrayal of the first, but a deepening of its themes in new directions. Far from flopping, season two, i.e. the New Testament, consists of God's best material. On the other side of Jesus' cross and resurrection, our little D deaths through the hard, frustrating parts of confronting ourselves and lives are the only true pathway to healing. We do not become who we ought to be by grit and smiling determination, but by admitting the truth, who we actually are, that we're deeply flawed and wounded individuals. Yet love to hell and back by the truth who put on human flesh to bleed for us.